Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
An Erio's original.
Each week, we decide who's to blame for a historical tragedy. And each week, you tell us if we got it right. My name is Rebecca Delgado-Smith, and this is The Aftermath. Hey everyone, thanks for tuning into this episode of The Aftermath. Today we're speaking with guest expert Lillian Faderman, author of Harvey Milk, His Lives and Death, as well as The Gay Revolution. Let's hear what she has to say about the assassination of Harvey Milk. Hi Lillian, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi Rebecca, my pleasure.
So could you start off by giving us a little bit of background on Harvey Milk? What was his upbringing like? What career paths did he take as a youngster?
I call my book Harvey Milk, His Lives and Death, because he had many lives. He had so many different jobs. He was a teacher for a while. He sold vacuum cleaners door to door for a while. He was an actor and a producer on Broadway for a while. He ran Castro Camera with the man who was his partner for several years. And finally, he was elected to the San Francisco Board of Supervisors. I think that in each of those jobs, he learned something. He learned as a teacher how to psych kids out and see what they needed. And of course, that was useful as a supervisor and as a candidate for public office. As an actor, he learned how to present himself to the public. As a producer, he learned how to organize whatever needed to be organized for the best effect. I think that his very short life was really spent in what he was finally able to do, to achieve elected office and become a supervisor in San Francisco.
By 1972, Milk has moved to San Francisco. What is the scene like there at the time?
It was just becoming very, very gay. San Francisco had always been sort of gay, but the gay areas were kind of dispersed. There was one on around the Polk Street area. Gay people were everywhere, as they have always been, whether it's been acknowledged or not. But the Castro district was becoming a boys' town, as it was laughingly called, for a while. More and more gay men, particularly from various parts of the country, had moved to San Francisco and moved to the Castro area, where they created their own community, and they created freedoms that you certainly could not have back home in the Midwest or the South or some small town in the East. And so it was kind of a haven and a heaven for gay men in the early 1970s. By the time Harvey Milk arrived, it was that, or certainly getting to be that.
So how did Harvey Milk get the unofficial title of the mayor of Castro Street?
He worked so hard. And he was very good at what he did. He ran Castro Camera with the person who was his lover, his partner. But Harvey was not at all interested in running a camera store. I think that his partner ran the camera store. Harvey became known kind of as the shrink of Castro Street. That is, young men with problems would come to Castro Camera, and he would chat with them and give them advice and find them places to live and give them advice about jobs and give them advice about education. He loved that. He had actually tried to be part of a business association in the Castro area that was still, when he moved there, a lot of the business owners were still fairly straight. The business association didn't want gay businesses to participate, and so he quit that association and he started his own. And he was very clever in having street fairs in the Castro area, which became very big things, and entertainers came to the street fair, some major entertainers. He really understood how to pull a community together. And he understood what he wanted as well, personally. He was hungry for public office. He ran for the first time. He'd barely gotten to San Francisco in 1973. He ran for office.
Wow.
He ran for the Board of Supervisors. He ran again in 1975. He lost in 1973. He lost in 1975. In 1976, a seat opened up in the State Assembly, and he ran for that. And he lost again. So three times running for office, and he lost. What changed finally in 1977 is that San Francisco elections had changed. To get elected to the Board of Supervisor, you had to win citywide before that. And in 1977, the rules changed. You had to win your district. And so Harvey ran in the Castro district. And of course, by then it was very gay. And he had charmed the gay community. And so it was a fairly easy win for him in 1977. So the fourth time was the charm.
Fourth time was a charm. And he was a charm. So what was the platform that, you know, he ran on, and how did it get support from, you know, different local groups?
He was a politician, which is not to say that he wasn't sincere. I think when he told a group something, he really absolutely meant it. But he always knew who his audience was. When he was talking to a gay audience, of course, his message was very pro-gay. When he was talking to firemen, his message was how their wages were too low, how safety conditions needed improving, and how on the Board of Supervisors he would do that. And he did try to do that. He served the entire community. But when he was talking to the elderly, he talked about how the city should support dental care for the elderly, and how the city should support better transportation for the elderly. So he knew his audience. He always knew his audience. And it's as I said, it's never that he wasn't sincere. It's never that he was simply being political. But I think he tailored his message, as politicians do, according to who was listening. And he tried very hard to fulfill all the promises he made, not just to the gay community, but to all the various communities to which he spoke.
So simultaneously, there's another candidate, Dan White, who is running for city supervisor for a different district.
Yes.
Can you give us a little background on Dan White and the platform that he was running on, and what his district was like? What were his supporters like?
Dan White was running in a white working class district, quite conservative. One of the things he promised was that San Francisco was becoming immoral, and he would wipe that out. He would make sure there would be laws so that there wouldn't be so much immorality going on in the city, quote, unquote. I think he, too, was a politician. He knew how to speak to the people that were his constituents. And I think he probably genuinely believed much of what he was saying. I think he was very troubled that there were so many out gay people in San Francisco. That wasn't the only issue that he ran on, of course. There had been a Catholic home for girls, mostly for girls who were not married, who were pregnant. By the 1970s, there were fewer girls who became pregnant without being married, who felt they had to be hidden away for it in homes. Of course, by 77, there were abortion rights. There obviously was the pill. There was less of a stigma of pregnancy outside of wedlock. And so homes for girls, maternity homes, as they were called, were being closed down. There was one in his district that was being closed down. There was an attempt to open it up as a home for so-called juvenile delinquents, and his district opposed it. And that was the kind of thing he ran on, too. He would not let juvenile delinquents invade the district, and the rate of crime would go up. So it was the kind of thing that would appeal to conservative voters. So I think he was genuinely conservative and probably genuinely homophobic.
So after Harvey gets elected, is it a surprise? What is the response?
I think it probably by then was not a surprise in San Francisco that the Castro district would vote for a gay supervisor. And that same election, there was another woman who was elected, Carol Ruth Silver, from a liberal district, and she was a mother who was not married. There were other racial and ethnic minorities who were elected. It was a fairly diverse board of supervisors by then. And it could have worked. It could have been a board that cooperated with each other. I think that Dan White was probably in above his head. I think he had difficulty keeping up, and I don't say that to be derogatory about his mental capacities, but he wasn't as sharp as many of the other supervisors were. And I think that Harvey and Carol Silver were hostile to him, not simply because of his conservative politics, but because he always seemed to be quite lost. And you could be sure that he would be conservative in what he voted for, but it was as though he wasn't always keeping up with what was going on in the Board of Supervisors. And I think he felt that he was in above his head. And I think he felt that Harvey and Carol sometimes were mocking about his inability to keep up.
Could you discuss the Briggs Initiative and explain to our listeners what it was and how did it get brought down?
So in 1976, the winter of 1976 in Miami-Dade County in Florida, their equivalent of the city council decided that they would add to an already existing law ordinance, a non-discrimination ordinance that said there would be no discrimination in public accommodations and housing and employment for Dade County on the basis of race, religion, gender, disability, national origin. And so the city council decided that it would add sexual and affectional preference. And it passed. And it was up for a public hearing early in 1977. And again, it passed despite protests by the far right, including Anita Bryant, who was a pop singer well known for her orange juice commercials on television. The city council decided to confirm that this would be the ordinance that was the law in Miami-Dade County. And Anita Bryant and other conservatives formed something called Save Our Children, and they managed to get a repeal of the ordinance on the ballot, and it won. And once that repeal of the ordinance won in Miami-Dade County, then all over the country, all of these gay rights ordinances were being repealed in Wichita, Kansas, in St. Paul, Minnesota, in Eugene, Oregon. John Briggs, who was a state senator, a very right-wing state senator, who really had ambitions to become the governor, thought this would be a surefire thing. He would get an initiative on the ballot that would also be an anti-homosexual initiative. His particular initiative, it combined everything. It combined worry about kids and homophobia. And it said that if you were a homosexual, or even if you said anything good about homosexuals, you could not work in the San Francisco public schools. You couldn't be a teacher. You couldn't be an administrator. You couldn't even be a secretary in the office. And it really looked as though it was going to pass, as though the voters were going to approve Proposition 6, the Briggs Initiative. Harvey led the charge in Northern California. There were other leaders in Southern California. They really managed to unite the gay community as it had never been united before, in California, certainly. And they managed to get the Briggs Initiative defeated. It looked for a long time. The poll said that it would pass by a landslide. It was defeated by pretty much by a landslide. And that was certainly thanks to Harvey in Northern California. And there were also real heroes in Southern California who did their job as well. But I think Harvey really became the face of the anti-Briggs Initiative, not just in Northern California, but because he was so charismatic all over the state.
So was that the reason? Harvey seemed to have a premonition that he had a target on him. Was that the reason? What was it?
I think he had a premonition that he had a target on his back, because he was the first out gay man to win public office in the country. There had actually been two out lesbians who preceded him. He was the first out gay man to be in so prominent a position in 1973 to run for office. Actually, Jose Saria, who was a drag queen, a wonderful character in San Francisco, ran for public office in the early 1960s and actually got 5,000 votes. That was incredibly brave of him. But Harvey got much more attention than Jose Saria did, even in 1973. He lost in 1974, two lesbians won public office. One was Elaine Noble. She won office for the Massachusetts State Assembly. And the other was Kathy Kosachenko, who was elected to the Ann Arbor, Michigan City Council. So he wasn't the first gay person, strictly speaking, mm-hmm. who won public office, but he was the first gay man to win public office. And that brought him all sorts of national attention in 1977. I think he realized that as a gay man, he had a target on his back. And so as soon as he won office, he made several tapes that he distributed to his friends. And he asked them not even to talk about it and not to listen to it unless he were no longer with us. And in each of the tapes, he said that these were to be played only in the event of my assassination. He had a premonition. And perhaps it was because he received a lot of hate mail even when he ran for public office, but it was also because he understood how much homophobia there was all over the country and even in San Francisco, which was very gay friendly, but there were still people who were not gay friendly. And so he understood that he was in danger.
So after Dan White resigns, why does Mayor Moscone, why doesn't he reinstate him?
Well, Dan White assumed, and I think he was partly right, that Harvey told the Democratic mayor that White was a thorn in the side of all the liberals in San Francisco. And he resigned of his own free will. And Mayor Moscone would make enemies of certainly of the gay community and other liberals in San Francisco if, after White resigned, if he reinstated him, if he accepted, refused to accept his resignation after he had already accepted it. So I think that Dan White understood that Harvey and other people on the Board of Supervisors, including Carol Silver, were not his friends.
So how does Dan White go about his assassination?
He was gunning for three people. He was gunning for Mayor Moscone, who wouldn't reinstate him. He was gunning for Harvey, not only because he was homophobic, but also because he suspected that Harvey encouraged Mayor Moscone not to reinstate him. And he was gunning for Carol Silver for the same reason, because he suspected that Carol Silver was opposed to his reinstatement.
He doesn't get Carol Silver.
No, just by chance. She had a breakfast with a donor and advisor that morning. She did not arrive at City Hall when she usually would have arrived at City Hall. And so she was saved. But first, Dan White went to Mayor Moscone's office, killed him, walked the distance across the building of City Hall. There was a large hallway that separated the mayor's office from the offices of the supervisors. He walked that distance, found Harvey Milk talking to several people in the hallway, said, "Can I talk to you?" Went into Harvey's office and killed him.
What was the response after people in the city were told that Harvey Milk was dead?
It was shock. It was disbelief. It was great sorrow. The candlelight parade that night attracted tens of thousands of people was spontaneous. People just gathered in the Castro because that was his area, and they walked with lit candles from the Castro to City Hall, weeping. I talk in my book about a man who was standing on the sidelines and was incredulous and said to them, why are you not fighting back? Why are you just weeping? Where's your anger? Where's your anger? But I think people had too much sorrow to be angry. The anger waited until the verdict came down several months later that virtually exonerated Dan White for a double murder, for the murder of the mayor and the murder of Harvey Milk. It infuriated the gay community, but not just the gay community. And so, again, it was spontaneous. It was going to be a parade from the Castro to City Hall, but it turned into a riot because people were so furious that Dan White should be sentenced for a double murder to less than 8 years in prison.
Before I ask you my final question, I just want to touch on the Twinkie defense that was brought by Dan White's lawyers. Can you talk to us about that? And it's had a legacy afterward.
Yeah, Dan White's lawyers were very clever in forming the jury. They got to interview prospective jury members, of course, and anyone who was homosexual, they would not include on the jury. They made sure that the jury was and working class and conservative and sympathetic. And they were very clever, too, in making sure that Dan White and his pretty young wife sat right where the jury could see them both, this poor, helpless couple, quote, unquote. And the jury was sympathetic to truly absurd defenses. For instance, Dan White's lawyers were able to bring out that he was very upset in the days before the double assassination, and he subsisted on Coca-Cola and Twinkies, and he had a sugar high. And this was a man who had always been so conscious of eating well and taking care of his body. And the Twinkies and the Coca-Cola really made him deranged. And so it was practically not guilty by reason of insanity. It was temporary insanity. That Twinkie defense was used a number of other times until one couldn't use a Twinkie defense, but it was used to try to claim that people were not guilty of what they were doing because it was temporary insanity. They had these sugar highs. And the jury was sympathetic not only to the Twinkie defense, but as I said, they were sympathetic to this poor, handsome, young man whose life was ruined because he...
Lillian, at the end of the day, I ask all of our guest experts, if you had to pick one person or thing, it could be a concept, that you think is to blame for the assassination of Harvey Milk, who or what would that be?
I think that it would be hard to pick one person or thing. I think there were at least a couple of things operating in Dan White's mind. He was furious, obviously, that he wouldn't be reinstated to his job as supervisor, but the homophobia was always there. It was the fact that he really felt that homosexuals, as he put it, were destroying San Francisco, that homosexuals had to be gotten rid of, and Harvey Milk was the chief homosexual as far as he was concerned.
Wow. Well, thank you so much, Lillian, for helping us understand this terrible tragedy more. And we really appreciate you being with us today.
Thank you, Rebecca. Enjoyed talking to you.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss. If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
With us today, we have producer Amanda Lund.
Thanks for asking me back.
And fact checker Chris Smith.
Greetings and salutations to you, Rebecca, to Amanda, and to the Alarmy, as well as to anyone else who might be tuning in today or might be overhearing this from a nearby speaker.
I love the brevity. how about that interview? I'm so glad we had Lillian on. It's just, you know, to be able to, you know, give that rundown and really understand, you know, I loved how she walked us through just what was happening at the time and the kind of platforms that he was running on. It just kind of gave us a really good idea of the situation, you know, how it all culminated.
Yeah, and context of the time too. You
right?
know, just thinking yeah. about sort of San Francisco and how it was so gay friendly, and how even today that is threatening to people. So imagine, you know, this is back however many years ago. There really must have been sort of this rift there that could produce someone like Dan White.
Exactly. Yeah.
And also I appreciated her, you know, sort of talking about how Harvey Milk was a politician because, you know, he had obviously a lot of charisma and he had a lot of, you know, he was ahead of his time in social justice. But you don't think about him often as someone who is appealing to, you know, different constituents in different ways. You know, you think of them in, you know, you just don't think of them in that context. So it makes you wonder if he hadn't been assassinated, how far he could have gone. I know we kind of touched
yeah.
on that in the podcast.
Yeah, he was a not just a politician. He was a very good one.
Right.
I mean, so, yeah, it sounds like it. And what a just truly fascinating guy, like obviously taken from us too soon, but he really, even before he got into politics, just did a lot.
Yeah. Now, right. She said something that I was like, ooh, we should have put that up on the board. Ooh. Miami-Dade County. Mm. How did this escape me? Miami-Dade County was where the Briggs, you know, the seed of the Briggs Initiative started.
So, yeah, I mean, we could definitely could have been eligible for maybe a slap.
Rollerblading in a G-string bikini, just cruising along Miami.
That's Miami-Dade.
Ocean,
that's right.
Ocean Street. What is that street?
Ocean Drive, Chris.
Ocean Drive, baby.
The iconic Ocean
iconic
Drive.
Ocean Street. The street near the ocean.
The smaller boulevard that runs parallel. That's where Chris goes rollerblading.
That's right. It's always so empty, and I wonder why. I don't know why nobody shows up to Ocean Street.
But I thought about that while we were talking to Lillian. Did you guys think of anything else that we might have missed?
I mean, I feel like we covered a lot of what she was hitting on. And just to remind everyone, we did send white male entitlement to jail, and we slapped the Briggs Initiative. So I don't know, is there anything about that guest testimony that made you want to rethink the verdict?
I don't think so. I mean, I think we did a good job. Now, I have to say, while we were recording, it totally escaped me to do the listener recommendation put that up on the board. So I wanna read what I had picked out and see if that maybe changes our verdict. This is from Instagram listener at Cheyenne Sun Cat Sylvia.
Rolls right off
Cheyenne
the tongue.
Sun Cat Sylvia.
No, you nailed it the first time.
Thank you, Amanda. Now, they write, easy shortcuts to enter work via window. Otherwise, White would not have gone in. According to Wikipedia, during the trial, City Hall workers admitted that it was easy to enter through the window to save time. Easy shortcuts. Easy shortcuts.
He came in through the basement, though,
no,
right?
No, he came in through a window.
Oh.
Yeah.
To avoid the metal detector.
Yes, correct.
Very interesting. Now, it sounds like they're saying that a lot of employees would use this window, which is it like a floor to ceiling window? Because it's interesting to imagine like sort of our civil servants entering the workplace through a window.
I mean, I guess this falls under the category of City Hall security, right?
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe that was the one that got away, right? Mm. I mean, you got to be watching the windows, because when you think about a building, you think about a few different things. One is doors, one is windows. You got the roof in there.
Sure.
Molding, crown
walls,
molding,
walls, everything. The whole, and then you get into the whole stucco thing.
And all that stuff.
Yeah, but plumbing.
But I think windows falls under security, and we should have been on top of that. But on the other hand, this guy, if he had come across a security guard, would have just been like, hey, I belong here.
Right.
He's been there before, and you know, maybe he has business.
But I guess
there,
it's just getting in the gun.
It's the gun, exactly. How could he have brought it in? I guess, you know, it was his police revolver. So, I mean, I'm sure he could have found a way to get it in if he really wanted to some other way.
Yeah, it makes you wonder why he didn't just show up through the front door.
Well, I think he didn't want to get flagged, number one, because he didn't work there anymore.
I don't think they would have let him bring in his gun, and he must have known that. So, but it's possible he could have attempted the assassination outside of the workplace also. So I like this point, but I'm not convinced that it trumps what we sent to jail.
I agree. I agree. It would have at least put a barrier in into the, how it actually happened. But yeah, you're right. I agree with you. If you really wanted to do it, I mean, he could have found another way to follow them, a different location. So thank you again to our listeners for chiming in. And, you know, try harder because I'm kidding.
I mean, no one.
I love that thinking. I'm with Cheyenne Suncat Sylvia because I like the thinking.
No, I like it.
You need to be thinking practical, right?
Yes.
As an alarmist out in the world, what you do is you scan. We're scanning rooms. Mm-hmm. We're scanning exits. We're observing windows. We're observing locked and unlocked windows. And that's where our heads need to be.
Absolutely. I mean, if it was the end of the world, I would want to spend it with all of my listeners.
Well, that can be arranged. We can maybe do a meetup now that COVID's over. Can you imagine an alarmy meetup?
Oh my God!
Oh my God!
The Army
convention.
The Army convention.
We would have to find the perfect venue that has like all the best like fire precautions, easily accessible exits.
We would have a fire marshal at every exit. We'd have multiple security guards.
Honestly, at some point, we should do an alarmy meetup at the Queen Mary.
Oh, how fun! I mean, that would be great. I would like to speak to the guest expert we had for the Iroquois Theater fire, the fighter.
Fire marshal.
Yeah.
Just to make sure it's all up to code and, you know, everyone's safe.
It would be amazing. I don't know how this could be arranged, but to do a live show on a boat.
Oh, the, you know, boats, so many crazy things happen in boats.
You've been saying that from day one. You have. I think you said that at the Jose Fernandez episode. Yeah, the Titanic episode.
I said I'm from Miami and I know crazy things happen in boats.
We know. So can we, if we're settled on this, case closed, can I do a quick update?
Absolutely.
As Alarmy members, you know, next week is huge. It's our 100th episode.
We're
well on our way to 1 million.
Wow!
Wow!
Wait, to 1 million?
That's our goal,
we're about
right?
A tenth of the way there. I mean, that's you only need a
no.
one hundredth of the way there. Maybe?
No, wait. I think it's way more than that.
It'll feel more like I think.
I see.
We do more, it'll feel like we're going faster. So
okay. So, no, let's do the math though. We've done 100.
Okay.
We need 1 million.
900. That's
900.
So, someone else out there can do the math because I need you guys to do some math on these reviews that have been rolling in.
My phone is charging, so I don't have my phone, but I'm very good at what I call muscle.
Okay, try using your brain. I'm assuming that's the muscle.
It's one of them, yes.
So 1,424 minus, okay, I have to look this up. I have a screenshot of it, so I have to go back further and further in my photos.
My eyes are closed, just so everyone has a mental image.
Okay, minus 1,337.
You got that, Chris?
I'm going to go with 63 plus 24 is...
I wish I...
87.
87.
Oh, I got it!
I didn't.
Oh,
I wasn't,
you didn't double check?
No, I thought you said you had...
You were what, texting? Who are you texting?
I was
right going
to read a review from UK.
I don't know what that... God darn it.
Well, I think you might be right.
Give us the number
I think you
again.
Might be right. I think it's...
1424 minus 13.
Wait, what is it? 1424
minus 13.
31.
31.
93. Okay.
31?
93.
Wait, no, did you say 31?
Yeah. Anyway. 93. All
Which is good because we've gotten some, I think we've reached our goal, you guys.
Well, I got
100.
One from the UK recently.
Oh, the other one's
That someone took a screenshot and sent us Pippa Nixon.
Cool
name, right? Only started listening to the podcast at the start of lockdown. This was one of my earliest finds, and I'm so glad it got me through the entire year. It's enjoyable, informative. It's evolved from the beginning, and the aftermath has been a great addition. Would highly recommend.
Love it.
Nice.
Thank you, Pippa.
No mention of Chris. Checkers, but that's okay.
That's fine.
I'll let that one slide.
It's definitely fine not to mention Chris in your
review. I totally agree with that.
100%. Whatever gets you to that rate and review. So we really appreciate that's it. Right. I think we've reached our goal with our around 10 that have come in, you know, from various other platforms. But hey, take this time if you haven't, and we'll do a more professional tally when we announce on our 100th episode. We'll invest in a calculator. But I think we're getting, if we're not there, we're really, really close. So if you haven't rated and reviewed yet, please take a moment to do that now. We really appreciate it.
It's just a wonderful way to celebrate being on our way to 1 million episodes.
That's exactly right.
Isn't it?
It's great.
Well, it's been a wonderful hang with all of you. Thank you to all of our listeners. And I just want everyone to stay tuned, because next week, not only is it our 100th episode, but boy, do we have a treat for all of you. We are doing the Tonya Harding, Nancy Kerrigan incident, scandal.
Jeez.
Incident is
assault.
It's assault.
It's assault, but there's so much to talk about, you
guys. Save it.
You're not going to want to miss.
Save it for the pod.
Earios.
Powered by Acast.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author Elizabeth Gilbert about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.